Okay. Senate Energy, Environment, and Natural Resources Committee will come to order. Budget Division. Today on our agenda, we're first going to hear from the Science Museum, and then we'll start the DNR budget overview. We expect that'll take probably longer than we can get through in this committee hearing. So we'll just get started with that process. So we'll start with the Science Museum. Welcome to the committee, Dr. Jolly and Ms. Wilson. Do you want to come up too? Or whoever wants to come.
Here.
Welcome. We're glad to have you here.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I'm Dr. Eric Jolly, president of the Science Museum of Minnesota, and I want to thank you for the opportunity to be here today and talk about the essential nature of the support that you offer to us. I think the relevancy of the mission and work of the Science Museum has never been so central to the interest of this state. We have been focusing on the ways in which we can advance STEM, science, technology, engineering, and math education for our citizens and how we can create a hospitable environment for a state that wants to grow businesses in nanoscience and biosciences. We firmly are behind the belief that science is the literacy of the future. Science is an essential literacy, and it's essential on many dimensions. It's essential for economic participation, with 4 out of 5 new jobs that are predicted to be created in the next decade, which pay more than minimum wage, being in the science, technology, engineering, and math discipline. Getting our young people able and up to speed on science is critical. With knowledge that sector of our economy grew 3 times faster than the rest of our economy in the last decade, getting our young people up to speed in science, technology, engineering, and math is essential. With knowledge that we increase by 4-fold the likelihood of a student attaining a 4-year college degree when they have 4 years of high school mathematics, getting young people on the track to succeed is essential. So we do believe it's essential for economic participation and the well-being of our youth. We also believe that it's critical to civic participation, to understanding issues of environmental stewardship, to being able to ask questions of policymakers. Philosopher and educator George Hine is fond of saying that citizenry who understands science asks questions that get to the value of evidence and lead to better policies. I believe that when we want to be the center of nanoscience, of bioscience, of genetically enhanced foods, then we need to have a state of citizens who can ask questions about these processes nationally. I'll share. If it's called an organism, it has DNA. But nationally, when asked the difference between genetically modified food and non-genetically modified food, 70% of Americans say the latter simply don't have genes. Frighteningly, 48% of our high school graduates nationally cannot tell you that it takes 1 year for the Earth to revolve around the sun. We have to address this issue, and we have to do it in formal education and in informal education. In formal education, it's pretty remarkable. Think about a child's life, birth to high school graduation. They will spend 6 hours a day in school. It's only a quarter of the day. 174 days a year, almost 15 days average absenteeism. By the time a child graduates from high school, they will have spent 9% of their life in school. I think schools do a really fine job with 9% of a student's life. They will spend more than a third sleeping, roughly 3% eating and occasionally bathing. And that leaves 42% unprogrammed time. And in Minnesota, we are 46th in the nation in the availability of adult-supervised out-of-school and after-school programming. Yet it's the place where we can get students excited, where we can get them hooked on math and science and on the stories of their future. And so the Science Museum is boldly behind focusing on science achievement and scientific literacy for our community. In education, you may be aware that we're one of the leading providers of teacher professional development. In math and sciences, we provide more teacher professional development than the U or any other vendor that we know of. We're committed to teaching teachers. We reach every single county, bringing programs into schools that guide, educate, enthrall students, while at the same time we take the teachers aside and provide them coaching and professional development on site for up to a week at a time. Every county. We manage the St. Croix Watershed Research Station, working internationally to find the best answers to set policy for this state. The National Park Service has their scientist assigned to that station. Often DNR will call and ask if they can use our laboratory benches, and we help settle what water quality policies and goals should be for this state. Through our Warner Nature Center, we inspire young people to environmental stewardship. We help with bird bandings, and we do the small mammal survey that tells us what's the health of our state and our environment. Lately, we've been involved in leading discussions on public policy, both for the governor, for the U.S. Secretary of Education, for the Commissioner of Education, for GE in business and industry. We have led a number of STEM policy forums because we believe that science, technology, engineering, and math are the gateways to the future for this state and for our citizens. We do adult learning by running the Adult Computer Education Center, getting adults involved in understanding how science affects their lives. Programs like Body Worlds that changed how people care for themselves. We do our best to try and bring whatever resources we can across this state. But there are some barriers to that success. A few years ago, the Science Museum was at the heart of a perfect storm. After 9/11, school attendance fell short. After 9/11, we had a stock market loss that cut to our bottom line. And then we faced a cut in state funding. And during that same period of time, county funding, which was at $1.3 million, dwindled to zero. State funding at $1.3 million was cut, thanks to this committee, restored to $750,000. We even had to suffer a hockey strike, which, believe it or not, cost us $250,000 in parking revenues. And across the same period of time, we've watched our utility bills and other fixed costs grow. Inflation does hit the Science Museum. My electric bills the last few months, $40,000 a month. I don't even want to imagine what this month will bring. We need to face that financial crisis, and we're going to do our part. One part of what we're doing is increasing our visitorship, creating more relevancy to adults, because where adults go, young people aspire to be. And so we're bringing great exhibits like Body Worlds, relevant exhibits like race, that lead important discussions for our community. And as you may have heard now, Pompeii, one of the greatest exhibits to ever come out of Italy, will be touring the Science Museum. We'll do our part with visitorship. We'll do our part by trying to grow our endowment. This is our 100th anniversary. We hope that that will inspire others to look forward to the next 100 years. We will be working with our city to garner some advantage in debt reduction. And now we need the state to also help us by restoring state support. We are thankful that the governor recognizes the value of the museum and has increased the $750,000 to a recommended $1 million. But we are frayed around the edges. That program that delivers services, materials, resources, and training to every county is supported by six very aged vans. 2 years ago when I came here, I could say we have six vans that go across the state. Today, I have to tell you, I have six vans, only five of which work, all of them with over 100,000 miles on them. We've kept a program at world class, but I would feel ashamed to come back and say in 2 years we have three vans servicing half the state. So we need your help. I think we're at a critical juncture. We have retained an incredible vibrancy, an incredible sense of importance and relevancy to the community. We've grown our place in policy, working with education, and we're growing even more. We have a partnership now with 3M that will allow us to build something we call Science House into a major nationally renowned teacher resource center, a home for teachers where they'll have their own place to park, their own entry key, to come in the evenings after school and just chat with a scientist and a master educator, or sign up for a program which will give the scientist and master educator a chance to teach a curriculum that the teachers can go back and bring to the classroom the very next day. And our vans, if we still have them, will be delivering statewide resources from our collections that no one else can see. Where else in the world can a teacher grab a child's attention with a T-Rex toe bone or a braided stream that's tabletop and delivered and picked up? We want to use those resources wisely and to leverage the opportunity that we're given to be the best private-public partnership in this state. So, Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'd be delighted to take questions or to talk more about its passions, but we really do want to set an agenda that closes the achievement gap, closes the aspiration gap, and creates in this state a resource of citizens who have a hospitable environment for building industry around the sciences and maintaining an environmental concern second to none. Thank you for your attention.
Thank you very much, Dr. Jolly. Senator Dill.
Now, Madam Chair, Dr. Jolly, thank you for your enthusiastic, excellent speech. That was very interesting and very good. I learned a lot from your speech, but one thing I guess I was a little surprised at, I didn't know the Science Museum was 100 years old. So did it start in 1907, or I'm a little surprised it's as old as that, as 100 years old.
Madam Chair, Senator Dill, thank you for an easy question. 100 years ago, on January 11th, the leading citizens of Minnesota gathered across the street from the current Science Museum and had a question: how do we help the new immigrant population settle into a community? And decided to incorporate the St. Paul Institute of Arts and Sciences. The first collection was, of course, a skeleton so they could explain health, and it grew from there. So we are 100 years old. Our very first public speech was on America's problem with race. 100 years later, we have what is the nation's most compelling exhibit on race, which is sold out for the next 5 years on tour. And I'm dealing with colleagues who want to know why they aren't first in line for something this important. And so a great idea was born that long ago.
That's just an amazing story, and it just makes you think that education, and there's no issues that ever become obsolete. They're all current and relevant, and will continue to be so for the next century, no doubt. I just love the museum, and I think a lot of us have been there with our families or with out-of-town guests because it's such a fabulous destination to go to and such a way to make science exciting and fun. That's what most of the public views it as, probably. But I know you do a lot more than that. Do you want to talk about this a little bit more specifics about your budget? And I know it says in here where your money comes from, and you touched on that, but how much the appropriation request that you're proposing, what exactly would that money go towards?
Madam Chair, Senators, I'd be delighted to talk more about our budget. Our budget request that we submitted was to return us to our level of 4 years ago. And while we aspire to be more, we hope to be no less. The Science Museum of Minnesota operates with a belief that nonprofit is a tax status, not a business model, and we do our best to be lean and on top of our resources. We have 65% earned income, which puts us as one of the leaders. I do not know of a science museum of our nature in the nation which does better. When you compare our budget of roughly $30 million, you will see that we receive a very small percentage from the state. By contrast, when you look at state, city, municipal support for other museums, our nearby partner, the Denver Museum of Natural Science, with a $22 million budget, received $7.5 million in support. the Liberty Science Center in New Jersey, which also serves Manhattan, with an $18 million budget, received $6.1 million in support. Last year, with $30 million budget, we received $750,000 in support. I'm not asking to have the level of support of a Liberty Science Center. I can do twice as much with half, but I can't do as much with less than a third. Were there? I don't know if you had other specifics about our budget to look at. We are also funded by the National Science Foundation. We receive more National Science Foundation funding than any other science museum in the nation, including the combined Smithsonian's. Now, that's not profit, but that's industry that we bring to this state. Thank you, Senator.
Thank you, Senator Dill.
Okay, Madam Chair, Senator or Dr. Jolly, I was listening to your fractions in your recent, you know, one or two sentences ago. I was trying to follow all the fractions, and from what I could gather, you got $750,000 last year. Governor Polonia is suggesting $1 million for you this year, but if I read all your fractions right, do you want $2 million this year?
We're requesting Madam Chair, we are requesting restoration to $1.3 million per year.
Okay.
So our change request was for $550,000 from the $750,000 original. The governor has put forward $1 million, and so we'd be requesting an additional $300,000 above the governor's request to make us whole unaccounted for inflation.
Okay. Okay. So the governor is recommending $250,000 more per year for the biennium, and you're asking for, what, $300,000 more than that? So you're asking for $550,000 increase per year?
Madam Chair and Senator, yes, that would be correct.
And would that get you back, let's see, back to where you were in 2002?
Same Madam Chair, that is correct.
So
we hope to grow back to 2002 size.
Okay, not accounting for inflation or any other increased costs. That would just restore it. Your budget. And then do you have a request for this? On page 3, it mentions a project request for $125,000 annually for issue forums.
Yes.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Kathy Wilson. I'm Vice President of External Relations at the Science Museum. We did submit a project request, knowing of the state's growing interest in issues such as global warming and the fact that the Science Museum really serves as a very objective kind of venue for those public policy forums. We put forth the notion of working with DNR and LCCMR and other state agencies to focus on key issues of environmental public policy, and suggested that there be a separate consideration for project funding for those kinds of forums. The governor's budget did not recommend funding for that initiative. And I would say, knowing, you know, of the many all the great competition there is for available funding, that it's clear that the Science Museum's priority is restoration of the operating funds.
All right. Are there any other questions from the committee? All right. Well, thank you very much for being here today and for your presentation. I still have my little, I think you passed it out 2 years ago, that little spinny thing. What do you call that?
A rattleback, Madam Chair.
Thank you.
It's a natural object found in rivers across Minnesota, and I'd be very glad to offer a science lesson on that anytime to any committee members.
Well, I think some of the committee members who weren't here 2 years ago probably would like to see one of those because they're just really wondering what we're talking about.
Thank you for your time, Madam Chair.
Great.
Senators.
Thank you so much for being here today. We appreciate it. We're going to let Mr. Mueller give us a little overview of this committee spreadsheet, the budgets, before we get into the next major state agency presentation. So everyone should have the spreadsheet at their place.
Oh.
Get out your rulers and your reading glasses. You can see this. Mr. Mueller.
Madam Chair, members, if y'all want to take a look at, there's essentially a three-page spreadsheet here. It's printed front and back. This is what some of the spreadsheets will look like as we move on through this year, and it shows the change items for each agency. Right now, all we have is the governor's change items. The way this is laid out, the first three columns with numbers are the previous biennium expenditures based on the November forecast for each agency. The next three columns, we have the governor's budget. The top lines basically are the November forecast carried over. And our first few pages here includes all funds. That's the total expenditure for each agency, followed by everything that's in italics are governor's change items. And then there's two columns after that. We have gov minus forecast, which basically shows the number of new spending versus the forecast. The next column is gov minus previous biennium, which is the governor's recommendations compared to the previous biennium. So it's sort of two different ways of looking at the governor's budget versus the forecast, and then also versus the previous biennium. And then the last couple columns are the tails. Like I said, the first three pages, I'm not going to go over all the change items. We'll let the agencies go over the change items for the governor's recs. But basically, the first three pages show each agency's and their spending for all funds. The last two pages, or the last two pages of this little handout is just general fund. And when we get a target or whatever we use later on for spending limits, we usually focus on the general fund, and our target will just be based versus the general fund. So the last two pages show each agency, their general fund spending, and then just the governor's general fund changes. And maybe for one example, since we just finished the Science Museum, we can go to the second page of the handout, which is on the back side of the first page. And we'll look at Science Museum, which is the second to last agency on the page. You'll see the previous biennium expenditures are $750,000 per year, and that's just state funding. We don't count all the other funds that they may receive from other sources. Then the next column, you'll see governor's budget. The $750,000 on top is the forecast, and then the governor's change item is $250,000 per year, as they were talking about, and then the new total would be $1 million per year. This is a simple agency. Our next agency, DNR, will find out what a very complicated budget looks like. I'll stress here, too, that this is a simplified version of one of the spreadsheets I'll be passing out later on that's about 16 pages long that goes into each division of each agency and how much is being appropriated for very specific items. So right now, this is just showing change items. Later on, I'll pass out another spreadsheet that shows all the appropriations, not just the change items. But we'll ramp you up slowly. Start with easier spreadsheets until we get to the big one.
And as bills are introduced that have appropriation amounts in them and come to our division and we hear them, you'll put those on the spreadsheet as well, correct? At least when they're funded or when we make a decision to fund them? Or do you list them all and then we I don't know how you do that in terms of a draft.
Madam Chair, there are a couple ways we can do it. If we hear an appropriation bill or a bill that costs money that maybe everyone agrees on right off the bat that we're going to do, we can add that to the spreadsheet. Or if we just lay things over for consideration, I'll probably keep another list of all the other items that we're considering and show what they're requesting and maybe just keep another separate list going of other items that we're considering. And then at the time when it comes to putting a budget together, depending on what a target is, we'll have to line that up to based on what is being requested. So as we're hearing more bills, we'll depends on how we act on them, either set them aside or approve them right off the bat. And you also want to notice on the spreadsheets, I tried putting the page number in the budget book for each item of the governor's budget. And as we add maybe other bills from senators, we'll make sure the Senate file number and the Senate author, et cetera, are also listed on here. So it's hopefully a little bit easier to track. And another thing that we might want to consider that I haven't put on this spreadsheet is the revenues that other bills might produce, especially on game and fish funds and environmental funds. If there's a bill that increases a license, maybe, fee, and then spends it, I haven't shown the revenues yet on this. So that's another whole spreadsheet that if we're increasing revenues and fees, that'd be carried on another area. So like I said, this is one of maybe a lot of spreadsheets we'll be seeing, but I'm not trying to dump them all on you at once. So this just focuses on the governor's budget right now.
And members, keep in mind, again, that our timelines are a little different than normal and shorter than normal, and we're looking at trying to get, you know, roughly if we have to get all the budget bills passed off the floor by Easter, Passover week, that means we need to roughly get this bill out of this division by the end of March. So that's really just a month away from now. And that's rough. Obviously, we have to wait for the February forecast before we have our final targets. Also, of course, keep in mind that I think this division has had negative budget targets most of the last number of years. And so, you know, I'm not encouraging people to introduce bills that ask for money. But if you have them and you want to bring them to the committee, we'll certainly give them a hearing and talk about them. And we need to see those as soon as possible. So if you have a plan for a bill that you'd like to bring to this division, just make sure you get it drafted and sent to us as soon as possible. And we'll have hearings as soon as we go through the agency budgets. All right. Are there any questions about the spreadsheet? Great. Thank you. All right. Why don't we start by calling the... Oh, okay. Yeah, you can keep this spreadsheet in your notebook. This is the place for all this information, or in your folder, whichever you prefer. But hold on to this. And as the agencies go through their budgets, you're going to want to have your budget books here to come on up. We're ready. You're going to want to refer. There's a lot of details in the budget books if you haven't had a chance to read them over. We will go through a lot of those items as we have our committee discussion. Welcome to the committee, Assistant Commissioner Meyer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, for the record, Bob Meyer, Assistant Commissioner, Minnesota Department of Natural Resources. I thank you for giving us the opportunity once again to be in front of the committee and walk through our 2008-09 biennial budget recommendations. Just as a matter of housekeeping, you do have some items that we've distributed in front of you. The first I'll talk about here, it says 2007 budget fact sheets, and there's copies up here of all these materials. It has a table of contents on here. This provides some more detailed information about our change items that we have. I'll be walking through this document rather than the budget document, as the fact sheets have a little bit more detail than your budget books do. Kind of it's a little bit clearer in some cases and contains some performance measures and indicators on some of the things that we have out there. So I'll be using that as a tool to walk through the budget and also referring you back to the budget books themselves. Initially, the plan today is to go through several divisions, talk about how we developed our budget briefly, some budget reallocation items, talk about our operations support that you're going to see within each division, and then to get into lands and minerals, parks, and trails and waterways. So that's the goal for the day. Hopefully we can get through it, and if we're lucky, we might get through it a little bit early, but that's not my goal. So, also in front of you, you have four presentations. The first one is just FY08-09 budgeting for results, and then you'll have one from lands and minerals, parks, and trails and waterways. I'm using the same materials that we're using in the House just so the committees both have the same information. You've already heard from us with the background pieces providing a context of what the divisions do, historical funding levels. But in the House, we didn't have that opportunity, so we are talking about division core functions, where we're at, previous appropriations, looking at some performance indicators and measures that we have for each division, and then getting into the change items. So I want to make sure we're using the same information as you move forward, speaking with your colleagues. You have what they have. I'm not going to walk through the whole thing since you've seen most of it. I'll start with the brief reintroduction of the overview for the divisions with the division director, then get into the change item levels just in the interest of time. With that, going to the first one, I just want to touch base on where we're at with our budgeting for results. You know, we talked about this presentation a little bit. If you go to the last couple pages of that, if you look at slides 16 and 17, slide 16 lays out the process or the plan that we have presenting to you. This is kind of the schedule here. As I mentioned, lands and minerals, parks and recreation, trails and waterways today. Hopefully we can come back on Thursday and do ecological services, fish and wildlife, and enforcement. And then forestry, waters, and operational support will probably be one more additional meeting. Hopefully work with committee, we can get that time. There are a number of change items in the forestry division's budget that will take a little bit of time to walk through, and I know the fish and wildlife budget is always of a lot of interest with folks as well, too, so that might take a little bit more time. So that's just kind of the outline that we have. And then on the next page, budgeting for results, or the next slide, we have 27 change items in our budget this year, which is about half of the number that we had in the previous biennium. So there's a lot of things going on. I just want to give you an idea of the number that we have. And with that, if we can go to the fact sheets then, I just want to walk through a couple of the fact sheet items really quick. The first one, page one, DNR budget reallocations. We spent the interim developing our budget from a ground-up approach. We started out in the regions with four regional tours, meeting with the regional management teams, talking about the pressures that they face out there, learning about unique situations throughout the state that we're seeing, pressures that we're facing. And then we went back and had a series of senior management teams, which consists of all of our division directors and regional directors, and talked about as a group what our budget priorities should be, how we should do things, what pressures do we face out there. Not knowing what our targets would be or what the ultimate outcome would be, we took a ground-up approach, similar to what's being discussed around here, not examining our traditional base, but looking at the activities that needed to be funded and started with that, using building blocks, building our budget up from the ground. Through that process, we identified a number of areas where we wanted to reallocate general fund budgets that we had within the department. This spreadsheet, or this fact sheet, I should say here, discusses some of those that we're going to be talking about today. The land asset management change item, it's a change item of $860,000 to do accelerated work and to increase the funding on our land asset management activities through lands and minerals. I'm going to talk about the lands records management system as well. And then we're also going to be talking about some state parks issues when we get to that part of the discussion. So I wanted to raise that process up to you folks so you understand that. And then if you go to page 3 of the fact sheets, it's titled Operation Support Reallocation. This is a line item you'll see as I go through the presentations for each of the division. You'll see they have, I'm sorry, it's page 5. It's the third page. I apologize. The page numbers are double-sided on some of them. So page 5, Operation Support Reallocation. This request redirects appropriations from the General Fund, Natural Resources Fund, and Game and Fish Fund to be used to fund services provided through the OMBS or Office of Management and Budget Services and the Bureau of Information and Education. You'll see the table below, the total is redirecting total direct appropriations of $1.787 million General Fund and $1.106 Natural Resources Fund and $1.8 million Game and Fish Fund dollars back into the divisions. These appropriations were previously allocated to the Bureau, OMBS, and we paid for the activities for the divisions with those funds. What we're trying to do is to make sure that program managers have an idea of the true costs associated with operating the natural resource programs. Just as we have done in the past, dealing with our facilities management account, so they have an actual idea of the cost of operating and maintaining buildings, computers, things of that nature. We're trying to reflect a true cost accounting into our programs throughout the department. So this is a budget neutral issue. What we're doing is shifting money to the divisions, so then they will in turn purchase the services back through the Office of Management and Budget Services. Information and education, and then the OMBS pieces, the budgeting and operations support programs. We'll talk about that more when we do our agency-wide overview. We've developed an operations support governance model that will oversee all these activities. But as you see these tables, each presentation we're going to talk about has a change item table on the back of it here. I want you to be aware of, when you see the line operations support, where those funds are and what that actually is, because that won't show up in your budget books. Have I thoroughly confused everybody yet?
I'm looking for what's on the back. That's the
if you go to the presentations that I handed out here.
Okay, not the
First one.
Sheets.
No, I'm sorry. Okay. If you look at the one titled Lands and Minerals, FY 2008-2009, mm-hmm. Budgeting for Results, your slides have two slides per page. Mm-hmm. The last slide is slide number 18, is an overall change item table.
Okay.
For that division.
I apologize,
Madam Chair.
Gotcha. Thank you.
What I was trying to do here is make sure that you understand where each of these change item, the titles, what they correlate to, because you're going to see some of them throughout all the divisions. Operations support is one. Maintenance of service, which is either a general fund appropriation or we're taking dedicated funding out of the accounts on the next page, page 7 of your fact sheets. It deals with the cost, the contractual cost we're anticipating in the next biennium to keep that level of service, maintenance of service that's out there. What it represents, it's a 3.25% from the dedicated funds and a 2% increase that I believe is across all state agencies for operations support in the governor's budget. So you'll see that as a line item on each of the divisions as well.
Is that basically to cover inflation?
Madam Chair, members, the new contract costs. So it will come up. It's what we're anticipating the salary. They previously was referred to as salary supplements in other legislation in other years. So we kind of classified as maintenance of service. Without this level of funding, we will have to reduce our levels of service somewhere in the department. So we will not be able to keep up that maintenance of service.
So it's safe to say that in all these divisions, that amount is going to salaries?
Yes, Madam Chair.
All right. Go ahead, please. Thanks.
Thank you. With the basic kind of format laid out, I'd like to bring up Director Marty Vadas from our Lands and Minerals Division to briefly just review some of the core, or what the core functions are for the division, and then we will get into the change items for that division.
All right. Welcome to the committee.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair. Thank you, members. Again, my name is Marty Vadas, and I'm the director of the DNR Lands and Minerals Division. And I'd like to start out with this overview pie chart of the Lands and Minerals budget. I think it's slide number 2. And maybe just point out a couple of things on this pie chart. And one is that the majority of this budget really is the PIL payment, the payment in lieu of taxes. And that's a payment that goes to counties for state-administered, DNR-administered land within their counties. And this current biennium, 06-07, the PIL payment is $33 million. And next biennium, that PIL payment will go to $41 million. And one other thing that probably isn't covered anywhere else is under that special revenue portion of the budget. That too is the majority of it is the tax forfeit revenue, mineral revenue off of tax forfeit lands, and so 80% of that revenue goes back to the counties. So the majority of that special revenue is really money that goes to counties for mineral land within their county.
Right. Can I just a question on the? You said there's a big jump expected up to $41 million in the next biennium for a PILT. Is that because of more land in public ownership, or It's assessments. It's property values of the land going, assessed values going up.
Madam Chair, it's some of each, but the vast majority is just the change in valuation of the land.
And so the formula is, I thought it was just a certain dollar amount per acre, but it's not.
Madam Chair, it's very complicated, okay. But the short version is there's really two ways the PIL payment is made. One way is 3/4 of 1% of the value. So counties can ask that the payment be made based on the value of the land. And the other method is just a straight dollars per acre method. And there are some counties that receive that PIL payment by each of those two different methods.
Okay. That's plenty of detail for now. Thank you.
The next slide, slide number 3, just quickly talking about what the core functions are of the Lands and Minerals Division. Our division manages the real estate transactions on about 5.5 million acres of state-owned land. And so the kinds of activities that would represent would be land acquisitions, land exchanges, land sales, road easements, utility licenses, paying real estate taxes and special assessment payments, and doing mineral and agricultural leases. In addition to that, then, their DNR manages about 12 million acres of mineral rights. And the kind of activities associated with that would be really just watching the global commodities market and really understanding what's going on in the mineral business. And the purpose of that is understanding what royalty rates we can ask for on state mineral leases. We develop mineral resource information to support state mineral leasing and generate resource and reserve estimates on state-owned mineral land and look at ore quality and conduct field inspections. We negotiate mineral leases and administer those. Other item I wanted to mention is we enforce the mine land reclamation regulations, and we really do then establish and enforce those regulations so that land disturbed by mining is returned to a useful state after mining. And I just want to mention at the moment DNR is in the middle of doing environmental review and permitting for 3 new mineral developments in Minnesota. One is Middle Steel, which is an expansion of an existing operation, opening up a new taconite pit. The next is Minnesota Steel, which is a company based near Nashwauk that would like to produce steel in Minnesota, go directly from ore to steel. And the last one is Polymet Mining, and that's an operation that proposes to mine copper nickel near the Mesabi Range. So we've been very busy in permitting and environmental review over the last year or two. And I also wanted to mention that we do minerals collaborative research with industry, jointly sponsored and jointly funded projects looking at improving the quality of Minnesota's mineral products and really looking at environmental issues. And one thing that we have spent a fair amount of time on is looking at methods of reducing mercury emissions from taconite plants. And we also have a land survey unit in our division that does typical survey-type work on behalf of DNR. And looking at that slide, Minnesota ranks first in taconite production in the U.S., and sixth in sand and gravel, and third in horticultural peat. So that's just a quick overview of the functions of lands and minerals. And I think Bob wanted to move on to, Madam Chair, to the change level request at this point.
Madam Chair, members, the slides on pages 3 through 8, or slides 3 through 8, the committee has seen in the previous presentation, but I felt it important to leave them in there as a resource for you as you go through and assemble your budget books. The change items we have related to the Lands and Minerals Divisions actually start on slide 9. You can see there's the Minerals Management, which is on page 9. The page numbers on the presentation refer to your budget books, so I want to make sure you have a reference there, but then also the fact sheets. As I mentioned, we'll be working off of those. The minerals management account, change item. The DNR budget reallocation piece, talking about land asset management. And then the lands records management system. The minerals management account, if you go to the fact sheets, it's actually begins on page... I got it marked up here.
17.
17. This was the Minerals Management Account was established last biennium in an effort to capture the actual management costs that we have as a division or as a department from the minerals activity that we pursue. Of course, the minerals that we, the lands that we manage for minerals activity have a variety of ownership of the mineral rights: permanent school trust, permanent university fund, and general fund. And also local units of governments have some rights to minerals as well. What our proposal did 2 years ago was to capture the management costs off of the profits, if you want to call it, of these revenues, the royalties, before they were deposited into the funds. After enacting that, we heard from some people that they didn't like that too much, even though we were generating upwards of $20-something million in profits for these accounts. So the governor's budget this year reflects a repealing the minerals management account effective in 2008. In the establishment of the account, there was a balance or a carry forward in the account that was the way that it was set up. What we're trying to do, or what the governor's budget reflects, is using that balance that's already been collected of $3 million for the minerals activities in the first year of the biennium. The second year of the biennium then goes back to the way minerals activities were funded before, out of the general fund, and it reflects $2.896 million general fund change level. So it's pretty simple. What we want to do is utilize the balance in the account next year, repeal the account, and then go back to the general fund appropriation to deal with the concerns that primarily the university and other stakeholders that benefit from the sources of those funds want to have. While we recognize the need to keep those funds whole, we also have a need for a huge fiduciary responsibility for these accounts. Dealing with a secure or a known management cost or a source of funds helped us accelerate, in some cases, our activities on those funds. It's our goal to still work as hard as we can to make sure the revenues go into these accounts. But without that general fund support in FY09, it will definitely be reflected in our activities on minerals management. So
excuse me, Commissioner Meyer. So what would be the impact to if the money comes out of the minerals management account? Just kind of remind us what, how much money is, or where's that money coming from? What's the impact on the minerals funds? The income.
Madam Chair, members, initially the account was set up, I believe, Mr. Mueller, maybe correct me if I'm wrong, to capture about 20% of the revenue that was generated off of these lands before it went into the accounts across the board. If you look at slide 11 of your presentation, it shows the results of the mineral lease income for the past, it goes back to 97, and we projected out to 09, and actually 07 is higher than what we have there. So the cost, you can see the impacts to these funds, and the blue is permanent school fund, which goes out to the K through 12 schools. The salmon is a permanent university fund, which the university utilizes, and then the green is tax forfeited lands and minerals. So the net impact was to capture 20%, capping it at $3 million. After that $3 million is accumulated, then the balance goes into the accounts once again. So it's going to be roughly a $3 million impact across the board to those accounts.
Okay, and those accounts go directly into the general fund for the school budget and the university budget, or are they? How does that work?
Madam Chair, those funds are for each of those, the university and the school trust fund go to the corpus of those funds, and Mr. Meyer is describing is that action that captured a portion of that before it went into those funds. And so that money is deposited directly, and only the interest from those accounts can be spent for the purposes they were established.
So do you know how, give us an idea of how much is in the corpus of those accounts?
I have the exact number. I believe in the school trust fund it's about $650 million, and in the university trust fund I believe it's about $400 million. But I could, if you'd like, I can get the exact number.
No, I think that's close enough. That gives us the ballpark to know what the impact would be to take this money out of those funds rather than take it out of general fund. So That's really what we're looking at. And the recommendation is to go back to general fund. And I wonder if there's a way to find a middle ground, like to just take it out of growth. Because it looks like the income is going up so quickly from some of these minerals that we have on our state lands that maybe there's a way to do that without actually taking any hitting those trust funds in any kind of negative way. It's just a lot of general fund money, and we don't have a lot, we have a lot of good things we want to do with them.
Madam Chair, if you wish, it's something we can work with staff on discussing with other stakeholders, or as you put your budget together, we could provide you more information on this as well. So,
thank you.
Moving on from the minerals management account to the next change item associated with lands and minerals, you'll see is the land asset management account. It's on page 149 of your books. This is, as I referred to it, it's one of the DNR budget reallocation items. On page one of the fact sheets, it's the first one. The general fund reallocation we're recommending or we're seeking is $860,000. So this will provide the department and the Division of Lands and Minerals the ability to enhance real estate services for the management of state-administered lands and also improve the productivity, expedite real estate transactions, and aid in the protection of strategic natural resource lands, improve access, and other issues. Over the past biennium, one of the things that we're very appreciative of is the Division of Lands and Minerals' work on exchanging school trust lands that we've had within our parks for other lands throughout the state. This we're going to be, as I believe we're completed with that now.
We'll
be completed with about 4,800 acres of land that we've exchanged out of the parks into other lands that are more productive so we can generate funds for the trust. These types of activities are what we're looking to do to continue those types of activities with this $860,000 reallocation. It'll also enable us to provide more activities or more hands-on work with counties as they seek things such as aggregate mapping, other resource mapping tools that we have out there, and just helps us get our work done in a more expeditious manner, which our clients and our customers expect. So as you see, as we talked about the budget for lands and minerals, it is heavily general fund dependent. So by recognizing the needs for these activities and going through our budget process, it was determined that this reallocation at this level should be funded for these activities.
Okay, tell us where the money is being reallocated, or from where is it being reallocated?
Madam Chair, members, the reallocation process that we utilize, I need to start with the Division of Forestry and the budget discussions we had there. In looking at their budget and going through their building blocks, some of the activities, or many of the activities that they were funding, we realized, or after reviewing them, were eligible to be funded out of the Forest Management Investment Account, which is similar to what we just discussed with the Minerals Management Investment Account, where we capture the revenues from forestry on acquired lands and put it into an account so we can utilize those monies for reforestation, forestry-related activities, roads, upgrade of our forest road network, allow people to get into the forest and to manage our forests. That reallocation of Forest Management Investment Fund dollars, which we'll go into great detail once the Division of Forestry is up here, provided us with the funds that we needed or that we were able to reallocate then. About $7 million of forestry activities were being funded out of the general fund that we identified were eligible for the Forest Management Investment Account. Recognizing the needs that we had as a division and as a department, we decided it was prudent to capture those revenues out of the Forest Management Investment Account, allowing us to free up the general fund activities for other divisional needs. The fact sheet on page one talks about all of those, $860,000 for land asset management. Some money we'll be talking about here next is going to the land record management system. Non-motorized forest recreation will be receiving $400,000 of that reallocation. The trails that we took, the Division of Trails and Waterways took over from the Division of Forestry several years ago. We need some funds to upgrade and maintain those. Clean Water Legacy, we reprioritized $370,000 general fund dollars from other divisions into Clean Water Legacy activities. We also reauthorized recommending a reprioritization of $300,000 into our conservation officer training program and $150,000 into state park interpretive services. It's kind of a, well, as you will learn by the time we get done here, the DNR budget is probably the most complex one you'll be dealing with in this division. And as we laid it on the table, we saw this opportunity. We recognized the need or that there's not an opportunity for large general fund dollars out there. And dealing with the concerns that we had as a department, we reprioritized our budget to meet those concerns kind of within the constraints of our own budget. So that's what you'll see when we talk about the budget reallocation process that we had. We had an opportunity to utilize funds from a dedicated account within the department and shift those costs out of from those funds that we were funding to general fund, other general fund activities. It really becomes more clear when you start, when you look at the forestry change items, because that's where the whole budget reallocation process came from.
Okay, so the total, if I'm looking at your fact sheet, the first one that says DNR budget reallocation, that's what lists all these different changes here. What's the total dollar amount that you're shifting from out of forestry programs into these reallocations?
Madam Chair, members, I believe it's about $2.5 million total for those budget activities.
Okay, and then will these be ongoing funding, or will these be one time? I mean, are you, if you're, I assume you need legislative approval to do this. Is that, you know,
Madam
to appropriate
Chair,
it so
members, we kind of look at our budget, except for our dedicated accounts, is all one time or 2 year. Budgetary cycle. So we have the ability where we have a lot of dedicated accounts that have statutory purposes that we consider those ongoing activities. Going through the budgetary development cycle and the legislative approval process, it kind of all is at least 2 year money for us. So these activities will reexamine the needs and come back, I would assume, next biennium with where they make sense or where the prioritizations are needed to come back. Some of them may not be. The conservation officer training, for example, $300,000 will provide us with another academy. We'll need to continue those activities, perhaps not at that level. The non-motorized forest recreation piece, the needs after we get done with this round of capital improvements, if you want to call it that. There's some bridges that need to be replaced. Some trails need to be upgraded. We come back and prioritize our budget every 2 years, I guess, is the simple answer.
All right, thank you. You got another question? Oh, Senator Rummel.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Myers, I feel like I'm at a hockey game. And I'm not following the puck very well. Are we losing or gaining?
General Fund.
Madam Chair, Senator Rummel, the overall increase of the DNR budget, not to confuse you any further, but with the increases to PILT and everything else that you see over there, if you go to Mr. Mueller's spreadsheet and just general fund, this says page one. If you go to, I guess it's page 2 of 6 here. No, that's the date. Let's see. It's the third page in, general fund summary. The general fund, total DNR general fund, is increasing $21 million, I believe. Is that correct, Mr. Mueller?
Mr. Chairman, it's $21.9 million over the previous biennium and $19.08 over the forecasted base. So that's the way that two columns work. So So versus the forecast, the new spending is basically $19 million of general fund.
Senator Rummel, are you done with your question? Okay. Senator Fredrickson.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Myers, Mr. Vades, I'm looking at our budget books, our budget documents, and I'd like to understand what some of these numbers are doing based on our budget sheets that are in this document. First of all, what are the technical adjustments that there's one-time appropriations at the top of the page? It's $161,000 each year, and then there's another.
Where are you, Senator Fredrickson?
Page 17 on the.
In the budget book.
In the budget book.
Okay, thank you.
And along with that question, there are technical adjustments. It says program and agency sunset. What activity is that?
Madam Chair, members, the agency adjustments and program and agency sunsets reflect to the mineral management account discussion that we just had. Oh. That is scheduled in the governor's proposal to sunset in 2008. So that's what's reflected there. The technical adjustments, one-time appropriations that we received in the past as statutory, as direct appropriations in the budget, I should say, line item appropriations from previous bienniums. I would have to go back and look and see exactly what those are. If you look at the current appropriation and the forecast base under the governor's recs, I'm just trying to walk through this for you, Senator Fredrickson. And maybe Denise Anderson, our CFO, has just told me that the one-time appropriations came from LCCMR, or Environment Trust Fund dollars. I try not to work off this page because I find it more confusing than what the actual budget that we work off of is, but I understand your questions. Do you want to walk through the whole sheet, Senator Fredrickson?
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Meyer, the remainder of page 17 is pretty straightforward, but I'd appreciate it if you go through page 18. Some fairly large differences in some of those columns between current and governor's rec. Under direct, for example, under direct appropriations, general is going from $5,550,000 to $6,445,000, and then almost 9.5.
Madam Chair, Senator Ferguson, that represents the general fund appropriation from sunsetting the minerals management account.
Okay.
At $2.898 million, the increase there.
And then the
60 read.
And then, Senator Fredrickson, Madam Chair, the next line is where we get into those budget reappropriations. It's part of it. Actually, it might be better if I go through the next change item before we get into this page, because that talks about our land record management system, which reflects all of the changes that are on this page as we prepare to get the funding in place to retool, redesign our whole land record system that we have.
Before you do that, maybe there's one other one you could comment on. The open appropriation from general fund goes from minimal to $20 million.
That it did.
Madam Chair, Senator Fredrickson, that represents the PILT payments that we're anticipating, where we are seeing the increase. And this is it's a good example, and thank you for bringing that up, because you see it come in as a revenue, but it doesn't go out as an expenditure. It goes out as a reappropriation to the Department of Revenue. So it's one of the pieces of the hockey game, I'm sorry to say, Senator Rummel, that's out there, that we track a lot of different funds. The open appropriations piece that Mr. Mueller talked about in the beginning of the hearing, of those $75 million, the DNR directly passes through about 60-something million dollars of those. We directly appropriate, or will be directly appropriating, of the $75 million in open, $41 million through PILT payments back to the counties. We have an $18 million standing appropriation for the biennium for firefighting in the governor's recommendation. But then also Leech Lake agreements and the 1854 Indian treaties is about $15.6 million that we passed through as well. So that's being reflected in these numbers as well.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Meyer, has the method of making those PILT payments changed? What I'm trying to understand is why for 06, 07 is $72,000 and $18,000 respectively, and then in 08, 09 it jumps to over $20 million. I'm trying to understand what's going on with that.
Madam Chair, Senator Frederickson and Mr. Mueller might be able to jump in as well. The transfer is reflected in the current. What you see here in the future is the money coming in, the PIL payments coming in. And if you go down on the bottom, you see the money going out actually in FY 0809. You'll see the general appropriation coming in at 2372 under open appropriations general. And then we account for that transfer on the transfer line there.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Meyer, perhaps what I'm not understanding is you're referring to the open appropriations higher on the page as coming in, and then the transfer is out. I understand the transfer is out, but I don't understand how the upper figure shows it being coming in.
Why don't
that appears to me to be a...
Let's call in Mr. Mueller. Maybe he can help us.
Mr. Chairman and members, this is more of an issue with how PILT payments are accounted within the whole statewide system, including all agencies. It's basically, if any of you look at the general fund statement that comes out of finance, and when we're looking ahead, PILT is counted under DNR as a forecasted item. When we're looking in the past, it's counted under revenue as an expenditure. So when the DNR runs their budget pages here, they're pulling it right off of finance's big database. So basically, the PILT payment is missing on the previous biennium because it's counted under aids and credits. But when we're looking ahead, it's counted under DNR. I've had some discussions with finance that it would be nice to always count it in one spot for comparative purposes, and they've given me some roundabout explanations that they agreed it would be nice, but the way that the money goes out, it's actually revenue actually distributes the money. DNR basically decides how it is going to be distributed. So it's an accounting issue, not so much as it looks like it's a big increase in spending in open appropriations, but basically they're not counting the PILT in the previous biennium because it is being counted under aids and credits in Senator Bach's committee. And internally, between us fiscal analysts in the Senate, I always count it under DNR, and the tax fiscal analyst always takes it out of her area when we're making comparisons to the Department of Finance's fund statements.
Okay,
Madam Chair, I'll try and understand that at some point. But I do have one more question.
All right,
And that's the game and fish expenditure. And I'm curious what you are spending game and fish money for in the Department of Division of Minerals.
Madam Chair, Senator Frederickson, that would be for such things as surveying the boundaries of wildlife management areas. About half of that actually is used because it's requested from wildlife managers to have the boundaries surveyed and signed so they can be identified. And the remainder would be for conducting things like easements and leases and licenses and those kinds of real estate functions on game and fish fund land.
Thank you.
Okay, I want to go back, and I'll get to you, Senator Chaudhry, in a second. I want to go back to the reallocations. Council pointed out, if you go to page 43 of the budget books, this is the forest management spreadsheet page, and it talks about, you said you're reallocating from forestry accounts into a variety of other areas that we just discussed. But on page 43, it also has some new general fund recommendations. So it's not all being transferred to the forest, what's that called again? The account, the special account, forest management account. There's still a $2 million increase per year in general fund recommendations. So we're trying to understand why things are being moved three times, you know, from forestry to these other programs, and then the forest management account is backfilling some of them, but there's still $2 million new, and why do it that? It seems a little convoluted. Why not just put new money into these other areas which you've identified as needing new money?
Madam Chair, members, let me step back one step and talk about our last change item within lands and minerals, our land record management system, which I think once I talk about that, you'll understand those adjustments more correctly. The division, as we just were discussing, manages all of our real estate transactions. You know, 5.5 million acres of land, 12 million acres of lands that we manage for mineral rights, 8 million acres of surface rights that we deal with, 58 state forests, 1,381 WMAs, 11,800 lakes. All of those activities somehow touch Lands and Minerals Division dealing with easements, access, whatever we're looking at. As we developed our budget and we discussed about our needs long-term as a department, we realized one of the first things that we have to do is improve our land record management system. Many of you, I'm assuming, go to your county appraiser's office, or if you don't, maybe you will after I lay this out a little bit, and look and find out where the public land is, where you can put up some signs maybe for your next campaign, or where the land ownership values are, who owns land, plat maps, to see aerial photos, where easements are, property values, taxation values. Our system is running basically on a 286 computer right now with a DOS screen. We have a Lectriever system like they have upstairs in Senate Information with all of these files in there. You know how managing the paper is around here. We have several people who are specialized and trained to run this system, but we don't have a GIS application for our land ownership. Like the counties do. I live in Washington County. I was looking at some land issues there the other night, and you can pull up who owns what. You can overlay a plat map onto an aerial photo. You can pull up property records. That's the kind of system we need to develop. In doing so, we've issued an RFP to determine what the costs are and what kind of system we need to develop. We've also worked with the Office of Enterprise Technology on this, and our system is different than what they're looking at, but they will be compatible in the future. What we're recommending, and what you see, and what part of the confusion that we're having right now is there's three different change items related to this process. Going through that building block process, we identified a change item, the budget reallocation change item of $701,000. That is comprised of $343,000 from the Forest Management Investment Account, $326,000 from the Game and Fish Fund, I should say, $20,000 from the Water Rec account, and $11,000 from the Snowmobile account. That adds up to $1.402 million change item within the budget reallocation for the biennium. The other thing that we were just talking about, the other component of this, is a reprioritized. The change item is the 1402. The reprioritized general fund is $629,000, with $500,000 from forestry, $58,000 from parks, $48,000 from ecological services, $20,000 from trails and waterways, and $3,000 from waters, for a total of $629,000. The other piece of this, which is reflected in the trails or the lands and minerals general fund change item, is $270,000. So what we're allocating, or what we're seeking, is $1.6 million per year for the 08-09 biennium from all of those accounts reprioritized and the direct accounts to do this work. It's going to take us several bienniums to get this system up and running. The ultimate goal is to come out with a system by the end of 2009 that will be able to work the kinks out of it. We look to deploy it after that, train the users, and then provide the public with the access to the new data about our public land. So this will be something that you'll be able to run and access on your computers or your workstations anywhere within the state or the nation, actually. Anywhere probably in the world with the technology we have, the World Wide Web. It'll be based off of our computer system helping us and also you as decision makers determine the activities that need to take place. As we look at the activities of easements, purchases, wetland improvements, talking about some of the changes we're seeing in our wetlands that are coming up in the next decade or two decades out, being able to identify and access this information instantaneously, if you call it that, once we're done, is a very high priority, not only for the department, but for the state in general. And I apologize, Madam Chair, this is probably a very confusing way to lay this out, and I will be going back and trying to figure out a better way to show the hockey game, if you want to call it, Senator Reynolds, show how this all comes together. So if you bear with me, I'll have something for the committee at our next meeting to more clearly accurately display those transfers and shifts.
All right, thank you. And I do think, as we're talking about in a lot of contexts, but especially in the context of the dedicated funding bills, to look at large increases in the amount of easements and public lands that we're acquiring around the state, that it's critical to have this information in a transparent and accessible way that everybody can look at it and understand what's there. So I think that it's really, you know, the computer system you're talking about, I just got my 9-year-old a better system for Christmas, you know. It's time. That's really a high priority, I think, to modernize that.
And, Madam Chair, I would like to offer the invitation to yourself and any committee members or staff that would like to come over and see our system and experience it firsthand, however we can do that, just so you have an idea of what we're dealing with. And I'll also work with Mr. Mueller on trying to figure out the best way to display this information and characterize it for the committee for our next meeting.
Thank you. Senator Chaudhry, do you still have a question?
Yeah, on the Game and Fish Fund allocation, there was another Game and Fish Fund allocation to the Roadsides for Wildlife program. About how much are you proposing to allocate from the Game and Fish Fund that is not currently allocated?
But it's helping to serve all those areas.
Madam Chair, Senator Chaudhry, for Roadsides for Wildlife, I guess
in your entire proposal, how much is coming out of the Game and Fish Fund?
Madam Chair, Senator, when we get to the Fish and Wildlife Division, one of the governor's recommendations is to also provide a statutory authority for some of those dedicated accounts that have very rigid sideboards on what those purposes can be used for. We'll be talking about that at that time. The balances, I know Pete was around here somewhere. We can talk about some of the balances that are out there at that point in time might be the most appropriate. We also will have our Budget Oversight Committee reports for you as well. The general or the Game and Fish Fund total appropriations are $8.887 million in the governor's recommendations. You know, to the balance of that account after that, we can find out for you here momentarily. And just while we're doing that, the Budget Oversight Committee that we have, citizens that make up, take their time every month to come meet with us, talk about our budgets and our dedicated accounts. What you see in the governor's budget is also supported by them. And as another invitation, they meet on Tuesday nights once a month. If you're interested at all, Senator Chaudhry, we would love to have you over for a box sandwich and talk with the group. So I'll get that information to you guys as well. The balance planning forward into 09 is about $6.8 million, and if you look into the next biennium, it drops down to about $600,000. That's 2011 planning estimates with current spending.
Madam Chair, Mr. Meyer, let me try this again. How much new spending is coming out of the Game and Fish Fund with the governor's proposal?
Madam Chair, Senator, $8.887 million. That includes the statutory appropriations that are there for those accounts as well.
What was that money being used for before? Or is that an increase in revenue from the Game and Fish Fund?
Madam Chair, members, portion of that $1.15 million we'll be talking about is being used for the Prairie Wetland Complex change item. which is being matched by $1.15 million of general fund dollars for our working lands initiative programs, things of that nature. All of the appropriations, $264,000 for the biennium will be used for wildlife disease management, tuberculosis at TB activities in northwestern Minnesota. Hunter recruitment education retention, $300,000. The statutory appropriations we're looking to receive are about $2.3 million. The other portion of that we're trying to capture is actually the Budget Oversight Committee recommended that we not subsidize the tournament fishing licenses that we currently do right now. Right now we're spending about $108,000 a year doing the licensing activities for these fishing tournaments. What we're trying to do is seek the authority to capture our costs for those activities, much like we do on other permits that we issue right now. Those are the main ones, $200,000 for the roadside habitat program. And we can get really more into depth on those when the Fish and Wildlife budget comes up. I'd love to sit down and walk through those individually with you, Senator.
Senator Chaudhry, we'll spend plenty of time on that when we get to those accounts and to that part of the budget. So shall we continue?
Madam Chair, members, that does represent that represents the change items related to lands and minerals. We can touch on that, or I'll work with committee staff at how to best come back and talk about the land records process as we move forward. Next, I'd like to move into the Parks and Recreation Division with Division Director Cortland Nelson and have him just provide a little brief overview and then talk about the change items we have for that division.
All right, great. Thank you. And we have another little sheet like this with the pie chart on the front. And then I assume you have some fact sheets, too.
We'll be going to those as well. And, Madam Chair, rather than give you all 200 slides at one time, we decided we would break it up by division so then you can put them in your book in whatever order you'd like, just to kind of break it down and keep it a little bit more manageable for you.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Nelson.
Madam Chairman, Cortland Nelson, Director of State Parks. Members, thank you for the opportunity to talk to you today. If you would turn to slide 2 of your handout, it has the appropriation of our dollars through direct, open, and statutory. Essentially, half of our appropriation comes from the general fund. The other dollars that come to us or that are appropriated from a variety of other sources, the Natural Resources Fund and the State Parks component of that make up 35%. The special revenue, let me anticipate a question about that. Those are the special categories that have been set up for state parks from different sources. We have a working capital account that generates dollars from our sale of merchandise. The Douglas Lodge account brings in the monies from all of the overnight accommodations and food services at Itasca State Park. $250,000 from the underground Minos activities at Sudan Mine, which is University of Minnesota activity. For research, we have working capital dollars for our resource management activities for $250,000 and working capital for our interpretive activities for $490,000. And so that special revenue account is broken up in that way. We have a number of subcategories of that deal with specialized components of our agency's operation, and at another time, I can go over those if you have more questions about that. Moving on to slide 3, the activities of our division, as were reviewed a couple of weeks ago, are highlighted here. We are the windows to Minnesota for DNR, representing our various sites around the state, with our 8 million visitors who participate in our activities. We have our resource management programs, which at any given year are involving prairie restoration, pine forest restoration. We also are involved in a number of activities of invasive species eradication or control. And you see or will be seeing some statements about that. We also provide a wide variety of visitor services that I think most of you are familiar with. We do contribute in a strong way to the economies of particularly rural Minnesota. As you can see in the top bullet there, 10 of the top 35 attractions in the state in tourism are state parks. And one out of three Minnesotans each year visit a park. So we're an important part of our state's outdoor recreation and tourism activities. Moving to the next slide, for some of you who are not familiar with the distribution of our state parks, this map provides a good picture of that and also points out by colors the three biomes that constitute the state of Minnesota from a resource point of view. We are widely distributed in each one of those and have a number of responsibilities with regards to explaining the natural resource history as well as importance of those natural resources throughout our state. We spend a lot of our time internally figuring out how to connect with our visitors, the public, and a lot of our work and effort is rewarded with strong support both by this organization as well as our visitors who attend state parks. Would you want to switch to the...
Madam Chair, members, the next several slides talking about priority outcomes and measures we have discussed in committee. There's a couple there for your reference dealing with prairie and state parks, some of our prairie restoration activities that were ongoing, that we're taking. If you move to slide, it's going to be slide 14 is where we begin discussing the actual state park appropriations or biennial budget recommendations. You can see there's two change items that we're requesting for the coming biennium. The first one dealing with state park appropriation increase, and then the second one is state park interpretive services. I'd like to start with the appropriation increase, which can be found on page 60 of your budget book, but it's also number 33, page 33 on the fact sheets that you have as well. What this change item focuses on is gaining access to the account of the money in the state park account. We're looking for a change item or an increase of $500,000 in FY08 and $700,000 in FY09. This is going to be based upon the increasing of camper fees by $2 on average for state parks that we're planning on doing this coming season. Is it this coming season, Cortland?
It'll begin January 1st of 08.
So we need to get access to the dollars that will provide into that account, and that's what this change item is. It's $500,000, or it's an additional $250,000 in 08 and then $500,000 in 09. Camping fees are set by the commissioner's order. Currently, the camping fees range from $11 for a remote campsite to $22 for an electrical site. Camper cabins are $40 without electricity and $45 with electricity. Doing some stakeholder outreach and survey work, we've determined that state park visitors are willing to accept incremental increases in fees. Overnight use in parks right now are being subsidized by the day users, which is why we need to kind of correct this or try to correct this to provide those activities that everyone needs. If you look at the fact sheet, we talk about the number, some key measures and targeted outcomes. We need to gain, or what we want to do is maintain our 95% satisfaction rating. We're going to begin the process of doing another survey, tracking our park user satisfaction levels, and document where we're at after this year. The uses of these funds will be used to maintain park buildings, facilities, grounds, utilities, protect and manage natural and cultural and scenic resources, and provide conservation and education and interpretive services.
Madam Chair.
Senator Vickerman.
Madam Chair, what are the park fees going to go up? Did I hear you say $2?
Madam Chair, Senator Vickerman, the camping, overnight camping is what we're looking at raising. We have the park entrance fees are statutorily established. We cannot change what it costs to enter a park. Only the legislature can. The other charges within the park, we have the authority to establish camping, things of that nature. concession services and things like that. So what we're proposing to do beginning next year is increase the camping by $2 in order to provide us with a revenue stream to maintain some of the work or improve, continue some of the work we want to do.
Well, Madam Chair, just a follow-up. Are we getting to the point where only the rich people can go to the parks? I can't even take my own wood. I got to stop and pay somebody $5 for a stack of wood. You won't even let me take my own wood from another place. So something was wrong with the operation.
Madam Chair, Senator Vickerman, in looking at the neighboring states with regards to our camping fees, we are either in the middle or a little above average in our fees. It would be our idea here that at the lower end of the campground scale, and you recall, Senator, that we have these tiered by the level of service and the amenities at each site, that we would probably do little or anything at the low end of those camping scales so that those primitive sites, in all intents and purposes, would remain the same. Those campgrounds, the group sites, and the overnight facilities that we have at other facilities would probably be raised $2 or $3 per night, so that we would stagger those increases out over several categories. Specific answer to your question, we are to the point where in some categories we are have raised our fees and would probably hear some negative reaction from campers who come. On the other hand, particularly at our camper cabins, we are being asked by the Private Campground Owners Association to raise our fees because we are so far below the rates they're charging. So I think we can find a comfortable middle ground with this that would address your issue of not excluding individuals, particularly from those at our primitive sites, but at the same time generate enough revenue to balance out the level of funding that we're, or the level of revenue that we're getting from our overnight camping.
Senator Vickerman, I would guess, as someone who's spent a lot of time in state parks with my children, that the people who camp the most, who, in general, who have the biggest budget constraints, at least my guess, is families with children. And that's why they go there instead maybe of going to Disney World or a hotel or whatever. That's one reason they go there, because it's cheaper. And so, you know, sometimes they may not be using the primitive sites. They may be using the tent sites. That's just sort of my gut feeling. I don't know if I'm right or wrong, but that's been my observation. That so I think that's a very sensitive group of people in terms of price, is, you know, those who are coming in and tenting, and that's their vacation for the summer. And they don't have a lot of extra money, but they want to have a nice vacation and be outdoors and go fishing, and, you know, that's a great experience that they have available. Senator Bach.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Nelson, the additional fees for a campsite in a state park, are we also raising fees at the same time in state forest campgrounds, or are we just doing this for state park visitors?
Madam Chair, Senator Bach, we are not proposing to raise across the board forest campground fees at this point in time. We have not added amenities to them, and as you know, Senator, we have had to reduce services in those areas. So that, for the time being, unless forestry, who receives those proceeds, those dollars do not come to state parks. Those go to forestry. Unless they would be having a proposal to change those fees, we would not.
So, Madam Chair,
Senator Bach.
Mr. Meyer, is there a proposal to raise state forest campground fees in forestry's budget?
Madam Chair, Senator Bach, no.
Let me just go back and ask sort of a more basic question as well. If you your list of slides on page on slide number 4, you have a chart about state park attendance, and to me this has some pretty compelling information, because I mean, I know you're trying to keep your satisfaction rate at 95%, and that's great, but if you have fewer and fewer people going, we're still not achieving what our goal should be, and especially as our population grows, we need to figure out how to get more people into our parks. And it looks like the total number of visits has, you know, it was less last year than it was in 2000. It's fluctuated up and down over the last 6 years, according to this. But I do see that there's more campers, consistently more group campers, more camper cabins, and more total campers, it looks like. And so I wonder if you have any information about that. I mean, are you able to tell us why visits, state park visits, are not going up?
Madam Chairman, in 2001, there was a fee increase of the day use fee of a substantial level, and it went to $7. And that subsequent drop was related to that increase in day use fees. It has taken some time for that number to build back up. And so I think the trend line is going in the right direction as you see those last two or three years. We have benefited from good weather, and we are very vulnerable to that. A holiday weekend can wipe out a couple $100,000 in revenue for us, generally not on the camping end, but on the day use end. Secondarily, it was anticipated in 2001 when the fee was increased that more and more people would be incentivized to buy the annual pass, and that did not happen. The annual pass sales remained a little over $100,000. So the thought and the plans were that while the fee was raised, it would make it a better deal to buy the $25 annual pass. For whatever reason, that did not happen, and so the numbers remained lower. I'm pleased to let you know that from last year to this year, we have had an increase in 10,000 in annual pass sales. So we went from 107,000 to 116,000 in the sale of that pass. In the aggregate, $2,900,000 in our day use revenue comes from the sale of the annual pass. The $1.1 million comes from those daily pay-at-the-gate passes at used to be $7, now it's $5. So our trend line is good. I think the reason for that drop in 00 and 01 was related to the spike in the fees. We are very concerned and spend a lot of time talking about the relatively flat level of visitation at state parks and our marketing efforts, how we're connecting with new user groups, the services that we have been unable to provide because of some budget decisions that we have had to make in the last 4 or 5 years. All of those, Madam Chair, contribute to the very real awareness that we have about the relatively flat level of visitation that we've had in state parks for a number of years.
Do you have any parks where you charge more on weekends? Or would that be like, would that make people really mad? And charge less during the week?
Madam Chair, we actually do have the second solution in place. We have a number of examples that have been approved by the commissioner where we reduce prices at midweek or shoulder seasons, and those have proved on the first blush to be successful at a minimum level. I think the one that a number of you are familiar with has to do with camping, and we have a Discovery Park program, and we reduce camping $3 per night at selected parks that are less visited than others, and have had a number of promotions around that, and we'll continue that for the next couple of years. So under the theory of you can either raise the bridge or lower the river, we have decided to lower the river and to make it more affordable for individuals to be incentivized to visit parks on non-peak times, because for the most part, that's where we have the opportunities, that's where we have the best situation for people to come visit our parks. It's not on the holiday weekends. It's not on Monday through Sunday of the summer. It's on the shoulder seasons or midweek.
Okay. Thank you.
Madam Chair, members, Cortland perhaps doesn't give himself enough credit. He came in at probably one of the worst times for the state park program in recent memory with the budget challenges that we faced several bienniums ago. He has since taking a fresh look at the activities as he discussed the entrepreneurial ways of getting people in there. We also, as he mentioned, reduced the daily fees from $7 to $5 last session in an effort to get people back into the parks. We had a lot of discussions about this and the implications, and it's something we take very seriously, raising the fees, but I think we also recognize the need to make sure that the different users are paying what should be their fair share of the cost in the park and provide them with the activities. Raising the campground fees will give us access to some funds that, as you'll see in your presentation, provide us with the opportunity to do a lot of things. Upgrade systems, provide those experiences that people want to have in the park, while yet trying to figure out ways to bring them back into other parks and give them other types of promotional or benefits that are out there. So we do understand your concerns with this. It's something we take very seriously, but also realize it's something that we feel we need to do at this point in time to continue funding parks where they need to be.
Senator Bach.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Meyer, how much deferred maintenance do we have on state park buildings around the state? I mean, we have a backlog of maintenance. How much on buildings? Not, I know we have a lot of trail work and things that we're behind on, but how much deferred building maintenance do we have?
Madam Chair, Senator Bach, at any given time, we have from $15 to $20 million in deferred maintenance of existing facilities that is lined up to go through some kind of a capital bonding procedure. In addition to that, we have emergencies and system failures that occur not frequently, but often enough where it's a budget issue. We have, as you're well aware, in your part of Minnesota, the responsibility for 600 historic buildings and structures and features from various ages. That is an incalculable number, basically. At any given time, we are faced with tens of millions of dollars of capital development needs that we are evaluating for its critical repair and trying to line up the dollars that we get to take advantage of those opportunities when they come along. We do not have a total system value in the way that you are asking. We have prioritized certain components of that so that we are ready for those kind of questions during the bonding session.
Madam Chair, I bring that up because I've heard Senator Langseth talk about this year's bonding bill will likely be real heavy in asset preservation, and he often refers to MinSCU and the University of Minnesota where they've got a lot of not real glitzy work that needs to be done, but stuff that tends to kind of fall on the floor in the full bonding here because it's just politically a little nicer to build a new building than to do some repairs on an existing one, and just wanted to raise that to the committee's attention. We have some state park facilities that are, I think, in pretty deteriorated condition. I think the department's doing as good a job as they can with the money that they have. But I think if this committee sent a message to Senator Langseth that there's a great deal, if it's in the 15 to 20, whatever the million-dollar range is, that our state parks should be considered for some asset preservation language in this year's bonding bill. If we're going to be doing it for MinSCU and the university and other state buildings, I think it's only fair to throw state parks in the mix. You know, a lot of people come to visit this state, and I think it would be nice if our buildings were, you know, not in disrepair.
Mm-hmm. I think that's a very good suggestion, Senator Bach. On that point, Senator Kubley?
Yeah, on that point, Madam Chair, I guess, you know, is the same thing true that Senator Bach is talking about at the archaeological sites and the historic districts that we have out there? Do we have assets there that are in the same kind of need? Or?
Madam Chair, Senator Kubley, in a word, yes. We have what the Senator is referring to are the historic sites that we have throughout the system. We have archaeological sites from pre-settlement and Native American era. We have the Anglo settlement. We have the CCC era. We have some war sites from the 1862 battle. And we have others that have been deemed national landmark. In the aggregate, there are hundreds of features, dozens of buildings, roadways, bridges, pathways, some that are just fine as they are, where we leave those facilities in what we call a ruins condition, and we interpret them as a ruins. We wouldn't at all seek to rebuild the building, but many of the others, particularly along our state's watercourses on the North Shore, and at other selected sites of history, we have many, many challenges when it comes to protecting that. In the preview that you heard a couple of weeks ago from Bob, he mentioned that we direct 10% of our capital development dollars to these areas of interest with each appropriation that we get. So we try and slice off that most meaningful piece in order to stabilize, protect, rehabilitate, and in some cases recycle buildings so that they can be brought back to contemporary use. And so at least 10% of our capital dollars goes towards that effort.
Senator Quigley.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. Just a follow-up to that, I guess, you know, I may have heard it before, but I've forgotten. Does the state have a fiscal responsibility to the sites on the National Registry?
Madam Chair, Senator Quigley, I would say we have a fiduciary responsibility, which is to protect as best we can those sites and to make sure that they do not deteriorate. I don't know that we have a fiscal responsibility in the sense that we would be talking about with this group.
Okay. Thank you.
With some exceptions, I might have.
All right. Thank you very much. And if there's, you know, if we probably would benefit from having, I don't know if you guys are authorized to do this, but I guess if we ask you to do it, you can do it. So if you could put together, you know, just a short list of some key priorities for infrastructure, we could put a letter together from our committee or something like that and bring it to Senator Langseth. I think that's a real good idea. So we'd appreciate it if you could get us some of that information.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Moving on, the second change item that we have related to parks, going back to the DNR budget reallocation, is $150,000 to improve our state park interpretive services. This is on page 150 of your book, or going to that fact sheet again. It's on the lower right-hand corner. What we need to do is recruit and deal with our populations that are aging, more diverse, and urban with a natural environment, and expose them to this natural environment. We need to, or what we want to do, is dealing with certain segments, we're going to develop a Southeast Asian interpretive program for our parks, or certain of our parks, and also increase and provide the seasonal interpretive programming at key parks throughout the state, such as St. Croix, Interstate, and Lake Carlos. The $150,000 may not seem a lot, but for our interpretive programs, it does go a long way. And again, Director Nelson has been re-evaluating and trying to determine the most effective way, the most effective means to distribute these interpretive services. As you saw, the Division of Parks is heavily, heavily general funded, and they took a lot of hits in the past with the general fund reductions that we had to take and the budget reallocations and things of that nature. And interpretive services did receive some impacts, or they were impacted probably greatly by those cuts. We're trying to figure out the best way to reestablish these services in parks. This is the beginning of some of that funding to figure out how to do it more effectively. Maybe take a group of parks and have a naturalist. Take a group of parks as we have our satellite management, similar to how we're managing some parks right now, providing services maybe on a couple days a week, making sure people know that those services are available, rather than trying to put a one person in every park, which we just know doesn't fit right now. We can't afford to do that. So.
And what do you mean by linking youth and technology with outdoor recreation? Mr. Nelson.
Madam Chair, members, if any of you have been with your kids or your grandkids and walked into a museum or an airport or anything else, they don't walk up to the beautiful diorama on the wall and read about it with the brochure that's handed out. They walk up to the computer kiosk and they go online and they learn all of the things that are there to be learned. I had that experience with my daughter in one of the world's most famous museums, and she made a beeline right for the computer, and in 45 seconds she had printed out our tour and what we wanted to see and highlighted the various things. It's that connectivity that we need to make with kids. We need to do a better job of our website. We need to do a better job of providing the accurate and up-to-date information when they arrive at the parks. We, of course, have an obligation to break that tie as much as we can and to get them involved in natural resource education and outdoor activities and health and one thing and another. But it is that combination of connecting with young people at a point where they need to be connected with and then converting them some of the time to some healthy outdoor activities and some learning experiences in more traditional manner.
And where does this $150,000 reallocation come from?
Madam Chair, again, it's based upon the reallocations that we started back in the division that we'll be discussing within the Division of Forestry from those $2 million.
Okay. All right. Any other questions? Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, members.
The Division of Parks. It would be my intent to come back on Thursday, start with the Division of Trails and Waterways, move into Ecological Services, and hopefully start with Fish and Wildlife if we have time.
Senator Bach.
Madam Chair, maybe I could give Mr. Meyer a little homework. Meyer, it recently brought to my attention that the department is considering the purchase of some property on Moccasin Point on Lake Vermilion. I'm aware of the parcel. I think it would be it's currently be considered for development, and there's an opportunity for the department to secure what would be a very, very good boat launch. And I don't know what the price tag on the land is, but Mr. Meyer, maybe if you could kind of get a proposal put together for me on how we could fund the purchase of several hundred feet of lakeshore on Lake Vermilion. It's an excellent location for a public fishing pier. I know it's a very good location for barge traffic, the construction that's going on across the lake. It's an excellent location. I believe the private resort that's closing sold about 250,000 gallons of gasoline there last year. So I think it's a pretty good location maybe for the department to make sure we maintain those gas sales there, whether we do it or we contract it out to somebody. I think it's for Lake Vermilion, a fast-developing lake, I think it would be a very good investment for the state. So you could put some kind of proposal together that maybe fisheries and trails and waterways can split the baby some. And I think maybe fisheries has some interest in part of the area they've identified as a spawning area for fish. If you could put some kind of a proposal together for the committee to consider, I'd appreciate that.
Madam Chair, Senator Bach, I know just who to talk to. Thank you. We will do that. Would you like to see that in the presentation or just the information presented to you?
Just information to me that we can share with the chair would be fine.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much, Mr. Meyer. I guess we'll wait till the next committee to move on to the next division. So we'll start with trails and waterways on Thursday, right? That's our plan? Yeah. Okay, and members, thank you. And I'd ask you if you want to, you know, hold on to these handouts. We will be referring back to them. So put them in your notebook or put them in your folder, and we'll hold on to them for you.
I put my name
on. With that, the meeting's adjourned.